This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for conversation with an acclaimed jazz trumpeter, a stage production of an ancient fairy tale told in Russian style, or a colorful adventure with a pop art icon, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Wendell Brunius is one of New Orleans' most accomplished and versatile musicians, a top-notch trumpeter and flugelhornist, an engaging singer and frontman. Brunius is well-versed in a wide range of music, from early jazz to many eras of pop to R&B and bebop. Wendell Brunius is featured regularly at the French Quarter Festival, Jazz Fest, and in clubs around the Crescent City. He recently sat down with WWNO's Fred Kasten for a Talking Jazz interview at the old U.S. Mint.
Wendell Brunius was born at home in a Seventh Ward shotgun delivered by a midwife.
I feel really New Orleans.
Was there a lot of music in the house as you were a kid?
Oh, yeah. We always had a piano. So even before I played the trumpet, we used to play this Ray Charles introduction on One of These Days and It Won't Be Long. Do, 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 do. Everybody knew how to play that. So it was, and to play a little bit of Go to the Mardi Gras. That was another thing we all learned first before you even pursued to really learn how to play. Yeah, so it was a great thing. My dad was a great musician. He went to Juilliard Conservatory, and he graduated from high school when he was 15. But they had skipped him two grades, and he held us to that kind of scholastic bar, you know. So anyway, he was a great guy. He was a really smart man, a great musician. And my mother was Natsimova Santiago was her name. The Santiago family was from the Philippines, and my great uncle was the great Willie Santiago,
a guitarist,
first guitarist of jazz, and my two uncles Lester and Bernio Santiago were two of the greatest piano players. So, but you still had to practice, you know. I mean, I don't care what family you're from. I mean, you still had to practice.
For Wendell Brunius, the practicing on trumpet started when he was 11. Trumpet was something of the family instrument. Wendell's father, John Brunius, was a great trumpeter and pianist and arranger. And Wendell's older brother, also John, was a trumpet virtuoso.
My brother John was such a great trumpet player. When he was 14, my dad did a little arrangement of Flight of the Bumblebee for St. Augustine School. And he brought John a brand new Olds Ambassador, which I inherited as my first horn. But John went up there and played that Flight of the Bumblebee, man. And it was just, I'm never going to do that. I haven't done it yet, you know. But it made me interested in wanting to play the trumpet. So, like, when I was just blowing on the mouthpiece and stuff. I started learning the notes when I was 11. But before that, I was listening to all those records John used to listen to. When I was 9, he went in the Army. I was about 9 and a half. That was my 2 years of practice. You know, I'm going to practice that I can play in front of John. So, and especially when I got to, because I used to write down the fingering, the, you know, what note, this note was not a B, it was second valve, you know. Right. So I wrote down the things almost like phonetically that I could play this. And I learned this song from Menard Ferguson called People. And on the end, Ferguson hits this high note. Well, I could do a false embouchure. He'd squeak a high note, you know. When John came back from the Army, man, hey, I'm cocky. Yeah. You know, Mama said, go get your horn, pumpkin. Play something for John. So I put this record of People on. I'd heard him play that, you know. I mean, he knew it, you know, and he knew I was hitting all kind of false fingerings and wrong notes and stuff like that. But boy, when I hit that high note on the end, man, I could see him right now. He just recoiled. Wow. You know, and anyway, just watching that I had made an impression on John gave me enough confidence to really start trying to get things together.
Wendell Brenius scored another aha moment in his development as a trumpet player when he was 15.
A cousin of mine named Johnny Fernandez. You ever hear of him?
Yeah.
Yeah. He brought me this record, Clifford Brown with Strings.
Right.
And he said, man, make this your summer project, man. Learn every note on here. I did that. It was, and it did so much for my tone, for being able to sustain notes. Clifford Brown play those songs on that Clifford Brown with Strings, you pretty much hear the words coming out the end of the horn. So it started me getting lyrical like that, you know, just learning to play melodies lyrically. And even though I didn't have sense enough to go and look up the lyrics at then, I've done since. But it that added so much, you know, to today and how lyrically that what I'm trying to play comes out of the horn.
In addition to music, Wendell Brenius loved baseball, was good enough to get a brief tryout with the Kansas City Royals, then went on to earn a business degree in college.
When I graduated from college, this was a hinge point in my whole life here. I was working for Sears. I had a degree in business. I was a manager of a little sporting goods place there. And Hurlin came in there one day, Hurlin Riley. Well, yeah, Wendell. I said, hey, bro, what's happening? He said, man, you still play trumpet? I said, yeah, you know? And he said, man, because I'm on a gig, and I'm playing trumpet. He said, but I want the gig as a drummer because the drummer's leaving. So I said, well, yeah, you know, I want to be there. And so it was at the 500 Club. It was a dance, risque dance show.
Bourbon Street.
Bourbon Street, yeah. And he said, man, why don't you come tonight and play a few tunes with us? Let the guy hear you, you know. So I went there. I played a few songs. Hurlin took the job as a drummer. I got the job as a trumpet player. And I haven't thought about a job since then.
End-o-day job.
Yeah. End-o-day job. I never went back to Sears. They may still have like
$17
or something.
Tell them what that's worth now. The 500 gig not only freed Wendell Brenius from day jobs, it also had a powerful musical impact.
On the job was a great piano player named Vladimir Vasiliev. He was the musical conductor for Charo. I mean, maybe some of you don't remember Charo, but maybe some of your older brothers and sisters could tell you about it. It was a lot of Latin jazz, original charts that he had written. And Hurlin and I developed a whole lot of stuff from that, man. He had all kind of licks like, these kinds of, you know, I never read anything like that, right. You know. And anyway, but as soon as we were playing all of that stuff, and we learned a lot of different clave beats, I learned to play a little bit timbali, and Hurlin grew like a weed in that band, man. He just became the real drummer. He became a real drummer on that gig there. And I developed a whole lot of things on, you know, working with Vladimir.
You can catch Wendell Brenius in duo with pianist Tom Hooks tonight at Dos Jefes, and leading his own bands at the French Quarter Festival and Jazz Fest. Today's interview with him was made possible in part thanks to support from the New Orleans Jazz National Historical Park, which presents the Talkin' Jazz with Fred Kasten interview series on the last Friday of each month in the third floor auditorium at the old U.S. Mint. The series continues this Friday afternoon at 2 with Fred's interview of saxophonist and composer Donald Harrison Jr. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO. I'm your host, Diane Mack. Moscow Nights is presenting Cinderella at its upcoming Russian Festival for Children. And acclaimed Russian theater veteran Natasha Raymer, who will direct the production, joins us, along with Tatiana Macchione, who is Cinderella. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Hi. Good morning, Diane.
Hi. There are many versions of Cinderella around the world, and this Russian version is not the same as the Disney version many young children have come to know. Tell us about this version and how you, Natasha, are bringing Russian theater to a new generation.
I choose my favorite playwright, Eugene Schwartz, who wrote wonderful plays based on fairy tales. So Eugene Schwartz rewrote Cinderella for movie script, and movie was produced in Russia in 1947. We love this movie, everybody. It was with very famous actors. So from the movie script, I tried to do my theatrical adaptation for this production. And I wanted to bring this play to the American audience, to our children, because they don't know Cinderella in this different way. This is the same plot, but a little bit different.
You have elements of ballet. You have a musical score that is an original score. Let's talk about those elements that separate it from the Disney version that we all know.
You know, Zaza Marjanashvili, he used to live in New Orleans, and I know that everybody, musician, knows Zaza. He's a wonderful jazz piano musician, plus he's a composer. His music makes magic for the play. I know that all actors love this music, and we create through the music many relationship and how to stage, plus a music for ballet. So this is why I invited Jefferson Ballet Theater and Kenneth Beck does choreography, special choreography for the drama actors and for his ballet dancers.
And Tatiana, you are Cinderella.
That's right.
What are you bringing to this Russian Cinderella?
Well, I think people tend to be rather surprised when they see me like, you're Cinderella. I have short, dark hair, and it really is a different look for the play. When Natasha saw me, she's like, you look like little boy. And I love this for Cinderella. In the early scenes of Cinderella, we really see kind of a feisty ragamuffin cleaning and working and really dressed like a little boy, climbing trees and trying to find her own place in a household that is really not welcoming to her. And the fairy godmother, with a swirl of her wand, creates just the most beautiful princess. The costumes are unbelievable, really creating this magical world.
Is there something you can perform for us?
Yes. This is a little scene. So the stepmother and the stepsisters and the father, they all get to go off to the ball. And the stepmother turns to Cinderella and asks if she would like to go and maybe sit under the window and get to watch the dancers at the ball. And Cinderella is thrilled. This is absolutely what she wants, just to be able to see just a little piece of the ball, even if she can't be involved. Then the stepmother says, well, absolutely, I would love you to be able to do that. But first, you need to polish the floors and wash the windows and clean the room and iron the sheets and the laundry and on and on. And Cinderella is my name. Since I mind the fire's flame, round and round I race. In the kitchen, where I tend stove and oven without end, cinders on my face.
I've been good since I was born. I work hard from early morn till the night will fall. I'll give orders. I obey. But I never hear them say any thanks at all.
Now, Natasha, you have been promoting Russian culture in New Orleans through your cultural arts organization, Moscow Nights.
Yes.
Since 1999.
Yes.
Tell me more about the importance of this cultural exchange.
You know, because I'm from Russia and my occupation is theater director and I'm also actress, I think it's my mission, what I could do very well, you know, how to work with actors, how to create, how to stage, what to do. And everything what I know, I would love to bring my experience. And I hope that people will appreciate this.
How do you think the story of Cinderella is relevant to today's young people?
Cinderella always will be relevant for young children because they understand what is mean kindness, what understand, you know, to be mean, what understand what the magic they could expect, because little children lives in magical world. I hope they will be happy.
Oh, that's beautiful. Natasha, thank you very much. And Tatiana, thank you.
Thank you, Diane, very much.
We've been talking with Moscow Nights Artistic Director Natasha Raymer and actress Tatiana Makione. Moscow Nights presents Cinderella at its Russian Festival for Children with performances March 30th and April 5th through 7th. This year's event includes a Russian tea room and bazaar on April 6th and 7th. It all takes place at the Rivertown Theaters for the Performing Arts in Kenner, 325 Minor Street. More info online at MoscowNightsUS.com. At age 75, revolutionary pop artist Peter Max, known for his use of psychedelic colors, is turning his sights to the works of master painters as he pays homage in his new Masters series, interpreting works by Van Gogh, Monet, Pablo Picasso, Renoir, and Edgar Degas in his iconic style. We caught up with Max by phone. Well, Peter, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Congratulations on your new Masters series. How did it come about?
You know, I've always wanted to paint all the different famous painters, and over the years, I painted Picasso, Monet, Matisse, Chagall. You know, I got photographs of them or self-portraits. Like, when I painted Van Gogh, there were no photographs of him. There were just paintings that he painted of himself. So I painted a painting of a painting.
So now, you went about getting the photos of them and you were doing portraits, but this particular exhibit goes beyond the portrait, I understand. You're painting some of their works in your style.
You know, after painting for so many years, I started really falling in love with the iconic works of Van Gogh and iconic works of these guys and some of their self-portraits and sometimes even something they did. So what I've done is I've done my interpretation of four or five of them, and I loved it so much that I did a series on that, you know?
Yes. Can you paint an imaginary picture for us by describing which works of the masters you concentrated on and give us a feel for how they look with your signature style?
Well, for instance, I took a painting that I had always a print of Van Gogh, who did a self-portrait. And, you know, Van Gogh had red hair. So it was a little print that I had. And I saw one day I'm at my easel, I got a canvas, and I'm looking over to my left, and there's that little photograph of Van Gogh. And I just kind of looked at it like as though he was sitting for me, you know? And I painted him with his red hair, and I did like red-orange, lots of yellow and red and red and orange in it. And I exaggerated the colors a little bit. And it was just a lot of fun. And an hour later, I had a beautiful portrait of Van Gogh. There was a Peter Max portrait of Van Gogh, and I loved it. And then I did some other things like that. But, you know, when I sometimes play homage to somebody, it's not like I'm copying exactly what they painted. It's like my kind of like take on it in my colors, in my design, in my color schemes, you know?
Yeah.
It's personal. It's what I do. It's how I do it.
So let's go back to how it all started for you. You were not born in the United States. How did you arrive here, and how did you come to art?
Well, it's a maze. I was born in Berlin. My parents migrated to Shanghai, which was the most beautiful place to grow up. So I grew up in a pagoda house, and I was there for the first 10 years of my life. I lived in Tibet a little bit, back to Shanghai. And then we traveled from there to Israel, from Israel to Paris, Paris to this, to that. And I wound up in Brooklyn, New York at the age of 16. And at the 18, I moved to Manhattan with a good friend of mine from high school. And I started going to art school. And I didn't even know that I would become an artist or that would be my goal to do that. I just loved art. My mother said, let him study art for a bit, he may love it. But I always wanted to become an astronomer. I loved all the messages and all the stuff we get from the stars, how big the universe, how colossal, how unbelievable the universe is. But then as time went on, I stayed in art without losing my interest for the universe. Even today, I've been into art for my whole life, practically my whole adult life, and I've only increased my love and interest in the universe. Can you imagine that?
Wow. You somehow managed to marry the two back in the 70s.
Well, maybe I did. You know, sometimes I would draw and paint these subjects. But mostly I love to, you know, the romance with the universe is the size of it, the bigness, the awesomeness. What has been done is mind-boggling. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where it came from, it's like mind-boggling. Nobody knows.
What's the next move for Peter Max?
Who knows? The brush will tell.
All right, Peter. Well, thank you so much for calling.
Thanks for having me.
The Brush Will Tell, the one and only Peter Max. His Master's Series exhibition is on view at the Angela King Gallery, 241 Royal Street in the French Quarter through April 9th. Well, that's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go inside the arts. I'm Diane Mack.